everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's July 2019, and you're listening to episode 131, which is a conversation about the television series on Netflix called Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. John D. Ferrer, who earned a PhD in philosophy of religion from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, and he's a teaching fellow with the Equal Rights Institute. John has written an online exclusive television series review for us, and it's called Sabrina, the Teenage Antichrist, and it's available free online at our website, equip.org. John, it's good to have you on.
It's good to be here.
Well, some people might realize that sounds kind of familiar, but back in the 90s, I think 1996 through 2003, back when there was just, you know, the big networks there on ABC, they had a kind of lighthearted teen comedy called Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and it's of a lot of Hollywood movies and televisions. They love series. They love remakes. So this is kind of a different remake. It's a new series called Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I know there's probably fans out there of the old one, remembering back to their high school days of watching Sabrina the Teenage Witch with Melissa Joan Hart. So for our listening audience, maybe some of them haven't heard about the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, but they have heard about Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Can you give us a sense of the show? What is it about? And is it similar?
Well, these are two very different shows that share the same characters. They're based on different comic book series by Archie Comics. So if you think of like Marvel and DC Comics, there's also Archie Comics as a parent brand. One of the subheadings, one of the lead characters that was most popular by Archie Comics was the Archie series. Well, one of the spinoffs back in, I believe, the 60s was Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And it was kind of like I Dream of Jeannie. It was playful. It was lighthearted. It was a situation comedy. And Sabrina the Teenage Witch TV show was based off of that. It's also lighthearted, playful, situation comedy, campy, teenage-themed entertainment. It's not going to confuse anybody. It wasn't scary, anything like that. Now, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is based on a much later series that is way darker and deliberately, overtly satanic. And I'm not saying satanic in that accusation of anything that's sinful. I'm talking about the worshiping of Satan is sort of this subtext of the whole series. People meeting and worshiping Satan, saying Hail Satan, and doing various debaucheries and a bunch of evil stuff. So it's much darker. It's a horror story is what it is. And it's based on Sabrina Spellman, who's been apparently promised to Satan to be his cohort, sort of a wife slash concubine slash slave, some weird combination there. And most of the early episodes revolve around her trying to escape Satan's grasp. But everything she does to avoid becoming deeper into Satanism is generally occult and witchcraft. So the development of the show revolves around her trying to get away from Satan, but she ends up back in Satan's clutches and still close friends and loving her close family, who are also Satanists, and her best friends at school are all but one of them has some sort of witching power of some sort. Talking to the dead, having what her friend Roz calls the cunning, which is extrasensory perception. Her friend Theo slash Susie is a trans male, a female who identifies as male, who is promoted as such. And she talks to her dead ancestor, Dorothea Putnam, from the Salem witch trials, that Putnam family. So everything about this show is just steeped in occultism, witchcraft, and Satanism. It's very dark. It's very scary. There's lots of death. There's lots of blood and gore. It's not at all like Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Anybody who tunes to it expecting a lighthearted teen romp will be very disappointed and very shocked.
So you mentioned it has kind of a horror element to it. So first of all, I want to find out if you're opposed to horror stories in general, if those are something that Christians should steer away from. And then also you're mentioning some occultic like themes and elements to it. And you kind of said that it involves Satan worship. So I'm just wondering, is this is not an appropriate series from just your comments because it has these occult themes?
Yeah. Before I pass judgment on this show, it should be helpful to know that I'm not a prude when it comes to horror movies. I'm a big fan of Walking Dead. I'm not saying everybody should be, not saying every Christian has, you might say, Christian freedom to go viewing all of that. It could be too sensitive for some people. I'm not making that judgment. But I find that the show Walking Dead to have a lot of redeeming themes, to be good entertainment. And without saying I'm supporting any of these other shows, there's other shows that I've really enjoyed. I've laughed through the Evil Dead series and Shaun of the Dead. One of my favorite movies of all time is Night of the Living Dead, which is a classic zombie movie. The Exorcist was good. The Shining was dark and psychologically disturbing, but it was still a pretty classic horror movie. Silence of the Lambs, I thought that was a phenomenal movie. And it was the only, point of trivia, it was the only horror movie to ever win Best Picture. So the horror genre, even though it's kind of marginal as far as high art goes and winning Academy Awards, it's always been a popular genre in TV and cinema. And I'm a fan, generally. So when I say The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is not safe viewing, when I say no self-respecting Christian should be watching it, except maybe for like research purposes, like I watched it for research purposes. I can't condone anybody watching it for entertainment purposes. I don't say that as a prude. I say that as a fan of horror movies who also happens to have studied from an apologetics perspective, Satanism and the occult. And this show comes way too close for comfort, does way too much promotion of satanic themes and occultism. Occultism, I don't want to use that term too lightly. When I say occult or occultism, it comes from the word oculare, which it's referring to secret, hidden, like hidden knowledge, hidden power, especially stuff that has been religiously forbidden. So when someone looks at a religion and says, oh, that religion teaches occultism, what they're saying is that religion advocates seeking out hidden and forbidden knowledge or hidden and forbidden power. Now, the common categories for that are recognized as a cult would be magic, spellcasting, divination, which is fortune telling, and spiritism, which is talking to spirits, whether ascended masters, ancestors, demons, supposed angels, or other spirit beings. So magic, divination, and spiritism are the three main headings where you can recognize something is a cult. This show has tons of it all over the place, and it lays it on really thick and doesn't just use it in some indirect or even a redeeming way, but is pretty blunt in promoting at least some form of occultism in most every episode. And that's ultimately why I can't promote this show to any self-respecting Christian. Really, no one should watch it, but especially Christians who should know that occultism is something we should toy around with.
So why would that be significant? You're just mentioning that Christians shouldn't watch it, but why should Christians be concerned or care about whether this show promotes occultism?
Well, in some respects, you are what you eat. You probably heard that before. If your diet, if your entertainment diet includes things that every episode, the characters are saying, "Hail Satan," and at least in the story and in the course of the show, they mean it. And then they engage in some of the lighter sins, some of the more common ones, like teen drinking, teens having sex, but also goes further and has those same teens being encouraged by adults to have sex parties and using that to revel in a religious celebration for their Halloween style solstice, where they actually are partnered up with someone they have no love relationship with. It's just traditional to have sex with another teenager, and the adults are promoting it. That's the kind of twisted element that they throw in there, so that when they're applying occultism, it's not just toying with dark forces, which is a common theme in all sorts of shows. It's pretty blunt about it, so it's not really artistic and indirect, and it's pretty blunt in promoting it, and then weaving in layer after layer of increasingly darker elements. So instead of just having sexual relations as teenagers, promoted by adults as part of a religious tradition, it's also orgies. It's also drunken orgies. I mean, these are the things that are promoted in the show. Now, you have to wonder about a person who draws their entertainment from this kind of stuff. Now, it's not like it just talks about it and then condemns it in the show. That's a literary skill called framing. You frame something that's really evil, and then in the course of the show, you talk about how it's evil. Or the hero of the story saves the victim from all of that, but the show still depicted it. We're not talking about framing. The whole show is about this kind of stuff happening and Sabrina navigating her way through it so that she can be just enough of a witch to where she's not sold to Satan entirely, but can still think in a fully occult way with a magical worldview of the power of will to manipulate world forces just by her desires, talking to the dead, casting spells to manipulate world forces in her favor, telling the future or telling secrets by using crystal balls or mirrors or things like that. All of those things are normal and promoted within the hero's worldview, within the hero's actions, or the heroines in this case, because it's Sabrina. And the ones that the audience is led to root for are all promoting that, except for Harvey Kinkle. He just kind of accepts it. He's her sometimes boyfriend. But that's the alternative to an even darker, garish, over-the-top form of Satanism, which is the sort of a fog of a villain that they're opposing. So you don't have any good options to turn to find someone you can root for as a Christian, hoping that they win, and ultimately some element of a Christian worldview wins out in that story. Nothing like that's happening. It's all just dark. Part of this is to be expected too, because one of the writers is himself a witch. I forget the guy's name. I should have written it down. I mentioned in the article, so you can read it in the article.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Dr. John D. Ferrer, and we're having a conversation about his television series review on Netflix's Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, and his review is called Sabrina, the Teenage Antichrist, and it's available free online at our website, equip.org. And I'd also like to invite you to partner with the Christian Research Journal. It's really vital that you help us do this, because to bring you all this free online content in the form of this podcast and online exclusive reviews like this one, we need you to partner with us, and you can do so in two different ways. The first way is, if you're not already a print subscriber, please consider subscribing to the Christian Research Journal. A subscription is $33.50, and you can go and subscribe at our website, equip.org. And another way you can support this podcast and our journal, and actually all of the outreaches of the Christian Research Institute, like our flagship broadcast, The Bible Answer Man, hosted by CRI President Hank Canegraff, as well as his podcast, Hank Unplugged, is we now have a feature where you can tip us. So you can see a link at John's review for Sabrina, and there you can tip us, and I would encourage you to please consider doing so. A tip is just a small amount, like $3 or $5, which is basically the cost of some people's favorite lattes or coffee drinks. And you can also find this link if you go to our website and go to magazine, go to the drop-down menu, click on PMR Podcast, find the landing page for The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, and you will be able to go to that link and give us a tip. So we are so grateful for all of our listeners and all of our subscribers. Maybe subscription isn't in your budget this month, but you can have a $3 or $5 tip. That is something that you can afford in your budget. So we would encourage you to do that so that we can keep everything completely free without a paywall on equip.org. And thank you. So you were talking about just some of the occult elements of this particular show. So it sounds like it's a little dark. It's maybe a lot of people aren't familiar with Satanism per se. So why do you think this TV show would be so popular?
Well, I think if someone had tried this kind of show, say 40 years ago, it would have been dead in the water. I don't think viewing audiences had been desensitized and pressed and persuaded to accepting this kind of story as normal, acceptable, and entertaining. If you think of your own TV experiences, say 40 years ago, we're talking about like The Simpsons. And perhaps the darkest thing on TV would have been not so dark, but more like a little foul, a little offensive, like Married with Children. Later came things like X-Files, which toyed with sort of a space alien themed sort of esoteric occult, but not so much religious occultism. But you also had Twin Peaks, which its first time around, I think 20, 30 years ago, it was canceled after two seasons. Only the reruns of Twin Peaks became popular and started to develop a cult following. Well, fast forward, once we get into streaming media, people can kind of tailor their viewing choices, and you end up sort of with these enclaves of specialized, you might say, artistically exaggerated stylings because people are finding their niche and focusing on that. And the internet and streaming media can specialize to that because they're not committed to a broadcast approach where you have to have something at 8 p.m. every night that's going to reach the widest audience you can. You can put a dozen different shows out there, some of which are really exotic and rare. Well, what we find is that some of the common themes that underline a lot of our entertainments end up sort of, you might say, pooling and directing us to things that are still dark, still scary, because horror has always been a means of entertainment, even in the earliest days of cinema. But Satanism as well has grown a little bit as a theme because I think in part, atheism is fashionable now. We had the new atheists come into fashion and secularism, and many people may not realize it, but contemporary Satanism is overwhelmingly atheistic. And if you were to hear them described side by side, it'd be difficult at points to tell which one is which. If we're talking about atheism as a culture and Satanism as a culture, they tend to be anti-religious. They tend to be reactionary against Christian morality. They tend to reject the existence of any particular God. Satanists will personify evil and individualism and the seeking of pleasure. They'll personify that as Satan, but just secular atheists, they don't have a personification of it, but they still hold all of that. And so I think the trends that have led to this show being popular include desensitization through our media over the years, growing and gradual exposure to occult and horror-themed shows from X-Files and Twin Peaks to Penny Dreadful and American Horror Story and even Walking Dead. These are becoming popular shows now. And then factor in the growth of atheism and secularism and sort of the decay of conventional popular Christian influence and culture. And you've got a big void where shows like this can crop up and appeal to people whose entertainments are now open to enjoy all sorts of things that aren't being bordered or hedged in by conventional Christian influence on society. So that's a long way of saying we gradually got here because of our occult fascination and desensitization.
Well, you just were talking about Satanism and atheism. And in your review, I know you talk about how you're not as concerned about how Satanism is presented in the show, but you have concern about an underlying just subtle message promoting witchcraft. Can you explain what you mean by this?
A lot of people may not realize that Satanists don't always broadcast their presence by wearing dark hats and having, you know, pointy mustaches and doing the conventionally overt, reactionary, obvious, rebellious kinds of things that we would recognize as Satanism. Some of them do, but oftentimes it's just theatrics, just sort of playing to the camera. What a lot of contemporary Satanists hold to really looks much closer to just religious humanism, emphasis on humans as the highest value. Now, there's some different distinctions between different kinds of Satanists. I won't go into that. When I do my review on the Hail Satan documentary, I'll save some of that for then. But because Satanism doesn't necessarily look like what we would expect, a person might not recognize it when it does enter the room. So in a show like The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, there's this garish, gaudy, over-the-top kind of Satanism that is sort of this dominant presence in the show. Sabrina's aunt Hilda and Zelda are Satanists. Her cousin Ambrose, he's a Satanist. They're all members of the Church of Night, which is a satanic church. And this form of Satanism that they hold to is theistic. They believe in a personal, conscious, godlike Satan character who is the one they worship. And they try to devote all their attention and focus and loyalty to this character, trusting that he will liberate them with knowledge and power that they would have never had otherwise. But they're also terrified of him. They revere and love him and respect him and want to be with him. But they're terrified of him because they also recognize that he's still very self-interested and very powerful, and he's still a devil. That's the kind of Satanism that the show portrays. And that's what many people think Satanism is normally. Well, maybe some Satanists hold to that, but at least the two of the leading forms of Satanism today, the Satanic Temple and Levian Satanism, the Church of Satan, they're atheistic. They don't believe in a personal devil, and they don't worship a personal devil. They have different views on magic. The Levian Satanists believe that magic is kind of a beyond science, but it's still the same natural forces that science hasn't yet touched. They think it's something that science might one day explain. So that when they talk about magic, they're not talking about it in the same way like supernatural powers. They're talking about natural powers. But Lucian Graves and the Temple or Satanic Temple, they're also atheists, but they don't believe in that kind of magic. They're more of like a socio-political advocacy group that really tries to play up the theatrics regarding freedom of religion, separation of church and state, and progressive politics and like strong pro-choice views and stuff like that. That's what Satanism really is. So when a person looks at the Sabrina story and they see this wicked, over-the-top, obvious, garish kind of Satanism, and they're cheering for her as she pushes away from that and tries to overthrow an oppressive patriarchy, well, what they're actually doing is stepping back into, you might say, Satanism light, a broader witchcraft slash occult outlook that still adheres to Satanism as normal people hold to it today within the Satanic Church. So they're rejecting a caricature of Satanism, but at the risk of backing into a more realistic version of Satanism. And because they never realized Satanism is what it is today, they don't realize they're molding their thoughts and shaping their outlook to agree more and more with Satanism as they watch the show and root for the lead characters.
Well, you were talking a few minutes ago about other shows, you know, that had occult themes like Twin Peaks and so forth. You know, and there's a lot of Christians that are fans of some of those older shows, like, you know, we talked about at the beginning, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and of course, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. There's just so many different occult themes in that. So, you know, those kind of young girls like Buffy and Sabrina the Teenage Witch, they were, you know, just really popular among younger people. And so how is this show different? How is this Sabrina different than Buffy or Sabrina the Teenage Witch?
Well, going show by show, Buffy and Sabrina, these were both sort of comedic. They were meant to be jokes, so there's a little bit of farce going on. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I've only watched a little bit of it. I haven't studied that one as much, but from what I gather about reviews on it, it's kind of a farcical indirect commentary on the plight of being a teenager and taking a lot of the difficulties of growing up and casting them in an exaggerated and dark light. So you've got this comedic and interesting way to look at, you know, boy troubles or having problems with a teacher who doesn't like you. You can exaggerate that and make it a problem with a teacher who's trying to kill you because they're a vampire, and really play out the gore and make it exaggerated and funny. But there's still a theme about the human condition underlying it. So there's still the potential for something, you might say, a redeeming artistic statement going on, even in the form of farce and comedy and these exaggerated storylines. When it comes to, for example, I'll take it another direction. There's a lot of Christian stories that are celebrated and highly regarded that also have occult themes. The Chronicles of Narnia, you've got a white witch in there, and you've got magical powers described and portrayed throughout the storyline. So a person who has a strict black and white, if it's got occultism, I don't do it. If that's their standard, then they're going to have to get rid of a lot of different things. Even the Bible reports on occult activity. It reports negatively, but it's in there. And if you don't allow for literary framing of bad things so that you can comment and critique those things, then you can't even accept the Bible, because the Bible frames occultism as something that we shouldn't do. But it still depicts occultists doing occult things. Spellcasters, diviners who tell the future, but they're actually mingling with demons. And scripture teaches us not to do that, not to mess with demons, and to avoid occultism. So the Chronicles of Narnia, Lord of the Rings, even the fairy tales of Hans Christian Andersen, you've got witches and warlocks and magical powers. The question isn't simply whether occultism is present in a piece of media. The question is more about how it's addressed. If it's addressed in a way that allows you to see through it to a human condition that can inform and enlighten, then it can be a redeeming message. If it frames it in a negative way so that we see reasons why we should avoid occultism, that is a worthwhile storyline. Or if it's occult in only an accidental or trivial way, then it might just be too negligible to be worth much comment. So just because a story has occultism in it doesn't necessarily mean it's promoting occultism, or it's persuading the viewers to think in a cult way, or it's desensitizing us to occultism. Those are dangerous ways to present occultism in a story. And that's exactly what this show, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, does in every episode. It's desensitizing, it's trying to persuade, and it's trying to orient the viewer into thinking in an occult way.
A few minutes ago, you mentioned patriarchy. And in your review does talk about feminism in more of the secular sense of it. And you mentioned patriarchy as well. Can you unpack what kind of themes that it deals with in that regard?
The show centers on a female, Sabrina Spellman, who is raised by her two aunts, Hilda and Zelda. There's not a strong positive male role model in an authority position that I can recall in the whole show. The male role models, if there are any, are negative. So the priest, the high priest of the Church of Night, Faustus, he's the closest thing to a single villain outside of Satan himself. He's sort of the lead villain for the first season. And he's the lead villain because he's traditional. He's patriarchal, meaning he thinks men should be in charge of the household. Men should be in charge in church, Church of Satan, but church. And he strongly emphasizes tradition and the way things have been and the way things ought to be, he thinks, are the way things have always been. And so he emphasizes tradition, male leadership. He's himself a male leader, and he laughs at the prospect of a wife having any kind of equality or equal standing with the husband. When he ends up marrying Zelda Spellman, he puts a spell on her so that she's just this doting, mousy, agreeable woman who doesn't have an opinion of her own and doesn't have a thought in her head. That for him is what a wife should be like. So he's modeling a kind of patriarchy at a couple levels, at a religious level, at a family level. So that's a negative cast there. And Sabrina, at different points, is rebelling against that and trying to turn the tables on him. Satan himself in that storyline is a patriarchal lead role, the head of the unholy ranks. And he doesn't have an equal when he tries to get married. He has a slave slash concubine slash wife, because that's one and the same for him. So his function and authority is male oppressive authority. So the image we get of male leadership is purely negative, or at least predominantly negative. So when Sabrina is rebelling against Faustus and then against Satan, she's overturning patriarchal forms. Now, this may not jump out to people unless they realize that a great deal of contemporary witchcraft and Wicca and neo-paganism and popular occultism emphasizes that we're in the age of Aquarius, which is a feminine age, which is supposed to be doing away with patriarchy, male headship, because in that broad perspective, patriarchy, male headship, that creates war. That gets people fighting, because boys fight, but girls get along. Girls work together better. So we need an age of Aquarius, not this warring age like we've had ever since the 60s and earlier. We're in the age of Aquarius. This corresponds at the same time with feminism. Feminism as a theme in the 60s, the second wave of feminism grew into this reaction against male headship and patriarchal abuses. So that patriarchy now is almost an entirely negative term. If you refer to the patriarchy, you're talking about abusive male authority. And that's the only way this show deals with males in charge, is in a negative sense. Combine that with the tone of trans activism. One of Sabrina's friends, Susie Putnam, of the Putnam family from the Salem witch trials, at one point, she begins to identify as a male. She cuts her hair short. She even sort of attempts a magic spell that turns her into a boy. And it doesn't quite go right, and there's a whole story around that. But she really sees herself as a boy, as a male, not as a lesbian, but as a male. And anybody who disagrees with her is treated badly, not necessarily cursed, but some of them are. But anybody who looks down on it is cast as a bully. And all of these things tie into the common feminism that is a lead theme in contemporary witchcraft and contemporary Wicca. She even starts a club in the first episode called Wicca, because this show is promoting witchcraft. But the feminism element might not be as obvious to people if they don't realize that that's this big banner that contemporary witchcraft has been flying for at least 40, 50 years.
Well, you've mentioned a lot of elements that you think are objectionable in this TV series. Is there actually anything positive at all, or anything of any kind of artistic value in this show?
Well, if I step back, I believe that all truth is God's truth. And pretty much everything out there, even if it's the worst kind of evil, there's going to be at least some sort of kernel of good in there if we're patient enough to search for it. And I don't think this show is any exception. The question is whether it's worth our time to dig through all of that just to find one flower. Or I put it this way, you don't need to swallow a camel for the water. they used to say that the humps had stored water in it. If you need a glass of water, just get a glass of water. Don't swallow a whole camel for it. There's easier ways to get your refreshment. And this show, I think, is like that. There's a lot of objectionable, offensive, desensitizing, wrongheaded things promoted and celebrated in the show. But if you step back, there's some campy, interesting connections to contemporary and classic horror stories. So there's a literary value in that. It ties into a lot of these ancient stories. It's just loaded with what's called Easter eggs. Those are little secret drops put in a show or a movie so that if you catch it, you recognize, oh, that's referring to the show Riverdale. Oh, that's referring to Night of the Living Dead. Oh, she's carrying an Archie lunchbox. Okay. And so it's got these Easter eggs. So it's entertaining like that in a somewhat innocuous way when it comes to those Easter eggs. The style of it is designed primarily around horror movies and comic books. So you get a really fascinating comic book styling worked into the show that perhaps a graphic artist could really appreciate and learn something from. It's the same way as if a guitarist went to some death metal concert. And even though the death metal concert is predominantly about death and destruction and very dark themes like Satanism and church burnings or whatever, they might watch the guitarist and say, wow, that's some phenomenal playing. And they might learn some skill and they might find a way to do what's called plunder the Egyptians. I heard this phrase first from Leonard Sweet, I think, in his book Postmodern Pilgrims. He suggested that we can plunder the Egyptians in the sense that we can take very lost, sinful, worldly elements of culture and try to retrofit those elements for good, just like the Hebrews back in the Exodus plundered the Egyptians and turned the Egyptians' gold into elements that they'd use in the temple. But they had to extract it first. They had to get it out of Egypt and retranslate it. And that was a lot of work. They had to go through the desert over the course of 40 years and endure slavery and a lot of death before they could mobilize that plunder for something redeeming. Most of us aren't willing to do the work involved to be able to plunder a show like this to get gold that can be used for sacred worship. But it's theoretically possible to extract literary elements, artistic elements, and retrofit that in a way that is redeeming. But that'd be a lot of work. And given what you have to go through to get there, I can't say it's worth it.
Well, on a much lighter note, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for John. So, John, it's the month of June, and various fruits are in season. So, blueberries or peaches?
Peaches. I'm from South Carolina and Georgia before then, so Peach State.
Also, it's summer, so vacation away or at home with a staycation?
Ah, that's a toughie. I would say vacation away, but I would probably actually settle for staying home. My dreams are bigger than reality, you know.
Are you an early bird or a night owl?
Night owl. No question. I can't understand early birds. God bless them. More power to them. I wish I had that. But my best hours for writing and thinking and analysis are between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m.
And are you an introvert or extrovert?
Introvert, but I can deceive people on that one. Back in college, my best friends knew I was an introvert, but all my other friends thought I was an extrovert because I'm comfortable in social situations. I just recharge on my own in solitude.
Well, thanks, John, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been Dr. John D. Ferrer, and we have been discussing Netflix's television series, which now has 2 seasons, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. John has written a review of this series for us. It's called Sabrina the Teenage Antichrist. You can read it completely free at our website, equip.org. I'd like to invite you to partner with us to keep our website completely free, as well as this podcast, which has more than 125 episodes, by doing one of two things: subscribing to our quarterly magazine for $33.50 at equip.org, or we have a new feature that I mentioned earlier, which is you can now tip, and you can tip at a link at his review or at a link on the landing page for this podcast about the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. And by giving us a small tip of, say, $3 or $5, which is the cost of maybe some people's favorite latte or coffee drink, you can help to continue to bring you all this content that is completely free to you. So we thank you for your partnership, and we appreciate all of our listeners. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.